let's just kind of get started here. What I want to do, I've got some online resources. I thought I'd go ahead and throw this up. I can email this to you, but there's a variety of these. Let me just talk about them. Gary Farley, I mentioned to you about the harmonica player. Gary is a director of missions for Pickens Baptist Association. He has a wealth of information on his site, on the rural church. Like, for example, here's an article on rural church evangelism. He really approaches it from a missiological viewpoint about how when you're talking about doing evangelism in a rural setting, is there a difference? Well, you know as well as I do, people have to get saved wherever they're at. And really, some people feel like you can be a little more impersonal in a suburban setting than personal, but I think that's really not true myself. But he talks about the intimacy factor. How do you in a small town, in a rural setting, really try to be a witness and leading your people to be a witness to people they've known all their lives, things like that. But he raises some very, very good issues there. But he's got a wealth of material on his site about the whole rural church. He comes as a sociologist for years and then began to apply that to church ministry, and served with our home mission board for a number of years as the rural association, town and country association specialist. He's done a lot of stuff with the rural Missouri stuff. So if you're not familiar with him, look at that. And then this rural church network, that is a long deal, but the rural church network is it's of all denominations, but it's a great resource that if you're really wanting to study the picture of rural church across the U.S. at least, this is a good one to look at. There will be multitude of links there that will lead you with different subjects in regard to the rural church. It's based out of Texas A&M University, the director's there. Now, most people think that Texas A&M University would be more of a secular college, which it is. I went to Baylor in the years it was a Baptist. No, I kid that all the time. But this is a little more conservative. No, Texas A&M. Rural Church, though, network covers lots of ground. If you went to one of their conferences, you might not be all that turned on if you're a pretty strong conservative, because they deal with Lutherans and everything else and just everything, but giving you a good picture of the whole scope. Okay. Then I've got a website that is ruralchurchplanning.net. There are a few links there. Look under rural links. I'm trying to keep that updated, and it's a little bit behind right now, but that's one. Then this Rural Policy Research Institute. That's where you get the source for the core base statistical area classifications. And if you'll plug into that, it'll give you your state and your county, and you can do an analysis at least of those kinds of things that would deal with population. Someone mentioned about all the North American Mission Board research department will give you anything you need and want, more than you'd even want. But this will also supplement that. Then we mentioned about the Acts 1:8 site and Map Church for local church. You could Google Cowboy Church, but many of you are probably familiar with Jeff Smith. Jeff Smith is Cowboy Church Network. Southern Baptist has out of North Carolina, has been a national missionary for NAM, is a great, great resource for the Cowboy Church. He's doing right now a number of videos, YouTube-type videos, and he's realizing that there are places where if you had a very articulate guy like he is, and present a story, you know, video-driven, and then they're building some networks of people who use that and just use them like, I guess he's the Cowboy version of Beth Moore. video driven.
That probably fits more than you think.
Okay. Anyway, Jeff Smith's a great guy. I'd like for you to know about him. And then SBC Small Church. There's a number of places. One of the rising issues in our Southern Baptist life is the small church versus the mega church. Okay, Kenny Moore, my friend out in Colorado, talks about us as SBC. We have a mega church, calls it mega church cult. That is, too much of an emphasis or too much of a fascination with a mega church, which really makes up about 2% or less of who we are. He gets pretty hard on us, but I've got some of his material here. I could send it to you and let you get in trouble with it if you want to. But the small church issue is continuing to become paramount in that, for example, about 84% of Southern Baptist churches have a regular membership, regular Sunday attendance of 200 or less. 84%. 200 or less. Now, I talk to guys in a lot of places. You'd say, well, man, if I had 200, that's not a small church. Well, about 63% of all Southern Baptist churches have a regular worship attendance of 100 or less. Now, I like to use that data, that regular worship attendance. I think it gives a clear picture of who the congregations are than it would be total membership. Our ACP is pretty inaccurate in a lot of that because it uses total membership. And if you've been around Southern Baptist a long time, you know there's a huge difference between regular worship and, you know, that inflated 16 million or whatever it is. But that gives you an idea about who we are. So think about that, 63% or 100 or less. You get a lot of statistics there. The point is, that's where most of Southern Baptist churches, existing churches, live. Then you start talking about planting new churches. Most new churches do not start as mega churches. They don't start as medium-sized churches. They are small units. My point of talking about embracing smallness is not just to stay small. Be what God calls you to do. Let it grow. Praise God. You know, there's nothing wrong with being a mega church by any means, or a medium-sized church. But there is something wrong with being a small membership church and then being a mega church wannabe. You know what I'm saying? The difference is that's always what you see as the goal or the ideal. Well, that's not the size is not the ideal. It's the authenticity. It's the penetrating lostness. It's being an Acts 1-8 church. And we'll talk about that in maybe our last segment about this, what we're calling a national reach initiative that could be really focused on rural churches, but also small churches. One thing I see about small churches, and you can critique this if you want to, anything you can critique, of course, but, the small church, small membership church, tends to do business the same, whether it's in rural settings or it's in suburban or metro settings. It sort of like the one-cell church. You vote on everything. You tend to have a bell cow or bell bull, somebody that's, you know, sort of a power broker. You tend to do that. So those kind of things sorry about that. Bad imagery, isn't it? That reminds me of the little joke about the little boy that was driving down the countryside and they saw these cows out there, calves, and the little boy said, another little girl said, hey, look, Mom, there's some little cowlets. And the little boy was a little more, you know, into the world. He said, hey, those aren't cowlets. Those are bullets. So anyway, corn. They were eating corn, by the way. Small church. So there's one website. I believe this may be a Les Purer's site. If you know Les, he's a pastor in North Carolina, has started a kind of a movement that way. And whether you agree with him or not, it might be more political than anything, but that's okay too. I do believe that we just need to give some more attention and profile to the realization of small church so that we can move on in a good, positive way that way. So there's an article. Then there's some articles, and we're going to look at this particular thing right now, articles related to the ADOM Church Starter, that's Association of DOM Church Starter Strategist Model that we're doing with the Church Planter Planting Village. If you're familiar with the village, that is the first part of that is the village, and I was talking to you about that. A wealth of resources. Go in there and you put in rural, put in there bivocational, put in whatever search, and you get a lot of good stuff there. One of the most active sites for church planting anywhere. But there's a page that we've devoted to this model called ADOM CSS. Right now there's just maybe two or three articles or papers that I have done, but we want to accentuate that and get input from different places about in general, the ADOM CSS is a mission strategist model of DOM, which if you're helping plant churches, that's what you are, whether you call yourself that or not. But that will, I think, will be of some help to you. And then Dennis Hampton was a missionary in Nebraska, started out maybe years ago in New England. He started, and then he ended up in Nebraska for many, many years, concerned about penetrating lostness in simple expressions, rural areas, ranch land, blah, blah, blah. And so Dennis worked with the Kansas-Nebraska area, Kansas-Nebraska Association, and you can look at that. That's the Kansas-Nebraska CSB. What would that stand for? Convention of Southern Baptists. I'm sorry. I got ate a turkey sandwich, and sorry, getting into my brain. Ministry downloads and resources. That's their general site that you can get this on. But then the direct links to certain pieces are those. And if you don't have time to get all that down, I will be glad to forward all this to you. What I'm really interested in this is I just found this out the other day. Dennis, 3 years ago, was traveling across Nebraska, doing what he always did, doing a whole lot of reading while he's traveling. And he came to an intersection. No, he had been, this was the old story. He'd always come to these major intersections and he'd go through them and didn't know he was going through the intersection, and it was some real near misses. But he, his son was with him, but he, something happened that night and he veered over into, and had a head-on collision with a truck of some sort. And, I don't know, we think that maybe he actually had gone to sleep at the wheel, but he was instantly killed. His young son, made it through all right, but we lost a tremendous missionary, Southern Baptist missionary in the rural areas. And we have since then, NAM does give a recognition for rural church planting every year, and we have designated it to be the Dennis Hampton Rural Church Planting Award to recognize someone that is doing significant church planting strategy in rural areas. So that's who Dennis Hampton is. I was delighted when one of my work associates, or actually a colleague out in, had worked with Dennis for a while, and he's now in New Mexico, told me about these online videos that Dennis did about his approach. You were talking about the home fires of faith. Dennis used some of that, but he captured the Lydia, Operation Lydia, and the discovery questions, simple kinds of things that he could go and train up some native Nebraska farmers and ranchers. And, you know, they would have to drive 100 miles to go to a traditional church. And he began to use mission principles to raise them up as leaders and simple things that they could put in their pocket and these ranchers could use it, using discovery questions, doing cultivated Bible studies and so forth. And so there's some really great videos here that these three things, I believe it's these, no, let's see, these three and maybe all of these. You don't have time to write that in, I'll send it to you. But he talks about all of these, the Bible reading plan, impart groups, mentor helps. And I was thrilled to know that all that had been captured on video because I was not aware of that. And so there were some more things that he did. Video presentation. So you see a wealth of stuff that Dennis did there. Okay. So we'll send you that. Before I jump into this other thing, do any of you, just very quickly, have some other online resources or other resources that have been helpful to you when you're talking about rural ministry or rural church planning? Anything that you'd like to share with the group? Okay. Just thought it might... all right. Now, what we want to do... I hope we can make this work. The reason I'm saying that is because it looks like this particular... Oh, let's hand these out. Even have you something to write your notes on. Yeah, if you just... what I wanted to do with this piece is... I'm going to pick on the guys that are here at DOMs. Actually, I'm not going to really pick on them. But I don't want you to disengage. Those of you that are not directors of missions, I don't want you to disengage with this. But let me tell you the background of this, and I think it can be helpful. Because, as I mentioned in the early stages here, I doubt that any of you are disengaged. I'm sure that all of you, as we talked about a while ago, have at some point, you are in an association. You deal with associations, either as a local pastor, or you're on a missions team, or if you are a Southern Baptist Church and you're in an association, you have a director of missions. So we're talking about an individual leader here, but we're really talking about a leadership style and a climate for an association of churches. But I think you can also, if you were, that didn't apply to you, I believe that this will help you in terms of if you're a pastor, for example, to encourage your director of missions as he is seeking to be a mission strategist among you. He's seeking to be like the brother, it was David Marlowe back here, was talking about trying to get his association to even do certain things. And maybe he didn't have a climate to do that. You can see that there's a different model. And then there's some of you in this room that are not, you're not my age or older, and you might aspire someday, I'm not sure if it's a good aspiration, but to be a director of missions. It's not that, you know, a director of missions should never be a graduation to between becoming a viable or being a viable pastor or minister and then the next stage to death. That's not what it's supposed to be, okay? What's in the name? You know, we call them directors of missions. Some people call them, Wyoming, they call them domes. Now, I never did like that, it's D-O-A-M, Director of Associational Missions. But when I saw some of those guys with their shiny heads, I thought, well, that's why they call them domes. Associational missionary. It may be all kinds of terms that are used for this ministry person. Some in the bigger places are called executive directors. All kinds of things like that. You know, some of you guys here in Missouri want to be executive director, don't you?
Yeah, yeah. They call us dumb old men.
Dumb old men, right. Jay Humphreys up in Colorado, when I surveyed him, and this comes out of a study and a survey, he really hit hard because he called all of his fellow guys, especially in the South, after he came up, called them dumb old men, you know. But here's the thing. There's a tendency to be either a director. You can choose between being a director of missions or director of maintenance. So what we're talking about is associations and churches on mission and leaders on mission rather than on maintenance. And the pull of maintenance, folks, is so strong in our culture, in our Southern Baptist culture. The pull is so strong. And if you are not intentionally doing some of the things or calling your association to be this, or your DOM, or you're a DOM to do this, then you will tend to default to maintenance. So you have to kind of move this direction intentionally. But it's our society and our North American culture today, as you've heard many times, and I'm sure you believe, it's a mission field. And we don't have the home court advantage anymore. We're not in a Christendom kind of experience. Our culture's against us. Our Southern Baptist culture against us. Our U.S. culture's against us. It's not friendly folks. We're in enemy territory. And so when we are key mission personnel, mission leaders, we can't afford to be people on maintenance. But there's a lot of folks that want us to be just maintenance keepers. Many within our own tribe, many within your association, pastors and so forth, because of the model they've seen. And maybe if that's the model they've seen and they graduate to that place of leadership, they will tend to be that. Now, this doesn't apply just also to new work appointed missionaries. The principles of this, I think, can be revolutionary to a missionary who serves in an association or an association who is in the stayed South, areas like we're here, Alabama and all those areas. It can transform an association because it doesn't matter where you are. A mission leader will set the pace. A director of mission will set the pace for mission outreach in an association. So I'm going to try to make this work. So as I do this, this is based on some research that I did. And I served this way and helped pioneer this model several years ago in Colorado, sort of out of default. It was a throwback to the early associational missionaries that were out in the pioneer areas, Benny Delmore, Dub Hughes, if you'll know those names. I'm not sure who it would have been up in Ohio. Those were guys in the West. But it was the guys that went out there in those areas, of new work areas for Southern Baptist life, and they were just planters. They were probers. They were strategists. And they were looking at communities, and we had no church, no evangelical church, no Southern Baptist church. So they were just missionaries. And so they were called at that time area missionaries or associational missionaries when you began to form some associations. At the advent of NAM, some of the guys in associational strategies in HMB were really, really doing some creative work in trying to call back associational directors of missions to that role of associational missionary. And Bob Wiley was one of those. He's wrote a great article. Didn't bring that with me. Didn't have copies, but I can send that to you. Gives you the history and the reason for calling back to that role. If you were at the national convocation this year in Ridgecrest, guys like J.C. Bradley, these guys were missiologists. And I was so encouraged with that convocation because it was not program-centered for associations, saying how we ought to do our office and how we ought to set up this, but it was declaring missiology and that we need to be on mission and we need to associations and DOMs need to lead out in that. So this is calling for a model of a mission strategist. Nothing new about that, in that J.C. Bradley wrote a book years ago on associationalism, and he in the 80s, no, let's see, I guess it was probably late 70s, 80s maybe, a lot of it's outdated today, but he used the model, a triangular model, of an ADOM, Association of Missionary. And on that model, he said he's a mission strategist, he's a leadership development, and then I forget what the third one is. It's one of the papers I've got here. But then what I said, this is, in my thinking, a DOM should be, in his essence, a mission strategist. That'd be the core. Then he would be dealing with church extension, church planning. He would be dealing with church health and then leadership development. These were the three prongs, I think, of an effective DOM this way. So we worked with a number of guys that were modeling this, mainly in the West, but I think there's some principles that we can share that I think will be helpful. So let me just dive into this and talk about these eight characteristics, and hopefully this will work and other than ADOMs will also see some application. The point here is this. Sounds kind of trite, but an ADOM CSS is an association leader. Leadership is important for organizations if they're to become effective and productive. You've read all the leadership things that say everything hinges on leadership. You may debate that. I'm pretty much of the conviction that as leaders in whatever realm go, so go the organization. We did this study with about seven or eight DOMs that model this out in the West, and we did surveys over a 10 or 12 year period, different ones. Roger Hill was one of those in Montana, fleshed this out. Dave Howitt fleshed it out. James Vaughn in Colorado, one of those was myself and a few others, about seven, that modeled this out, and our point was to raise this concept to a validated, I hesitate to say an institutional level, but simply to say this is a valid model that is really just, in a sense, out there, but it's not official. And then there's some states, and then we did a survey of all the especially the Newark State Conventions, and the Newark State Conventions, state DOMs and others, validated that this, I think every one of them, validated that this is the model that they were anticipating their missionaries, that are director of missions, to be. And that's what they were looking for. That's what they were saying. Yeah, that's what we expect. They didn't necessarily call them that. And there's some other issues. But the point here is this. He's an associational leader, and simply saying that they're among these guys that we researched, four things are evident in the missionary, these six missionaries, and I think will be evident in an ADOM who is a mission strategist. That is, first of all, spiritual foundations of prayer and hearing from God. Everyone simply understood that prayer, hearing from God, responding to God, and the assignment as a DOM, these were foundational to their ministry and calling. Now, wouldn't that apply anywhere? Boy, it should. Anywhere. But that was significant. Second, each one reflected the skill of missiological and strategic thinking as each led their associations to move from maintenance to mission. And I hope as you go away from here, maybe you can evaluate, is our association of churches, or even is our local church, is it more focused on maintenance than mission? We can't afford to be anything but on mission in our day. Third, as a leader, there was an evident characteristic of hard-working tenacity, of planning, organizing, and implementing strategies in their associations as they led these associations to plant churches. In other words, as a brother over here earlier said, and we talked about in the earliest foundation here of spiritual foundations, man, they believe that. That's important, spiritual foundations. prayer and all. But they also realized that once they pray, as old Curtis Griffiths always told me, a friend of mine, he said, when you're on your knees praying, then you get up and you walk toward where your knees are pointed. He was graphically saying there's a whole lot of planning and hard work, organizing and implementing if the work is to be done, but you have the direction from God. Proverbs says, we make our plans, but God directs our course. That's the balance of a strong spiritual understanding of receptivity, God's will, God's purpose, but then that never, ever excuses somebody to say, well, we don't need to make any plans. One of the greatest influences on our life today in these modern days was Henry Blackaby. And Henry Blackaby, often sometimes somebody would say, well, Henry, you're just looking for God at work. And, or it's like his, you don't do any planning. He said, oh, no. You know, then he began to talk about all the planning and promoting or strategizing he did. But he talked about the balance of that. Then fourth, as a leader, relationships are premium for these missionary, were a premium for these missionary leaders. Saying that this, a missionary leader has got to build, he's got to, all these guys had been workers in their association for a number of years. I know in my own case, I'd been a mission strategist or a planter for 6 years, and then I was asked to be the director of missions, associational strategist. And things didn't start kicking in until about 7 or 8 years after I was even there from the beginning. But we built relations, and you've got to have relationships as a missionary leader to lead a team. We talk about the climate. We'll talk about that in a minute. If you're to do that, so the value of relationships for this kind of a missionary leader with local churches, especially with pastors, cannot be underestimated. Now, a second deal here is, punch the button. Hang on. It's got to move somewhere. What's going on? Oh, there it is. This model of mission leadership focuses on penetrating pockets of lostness. Okay, we've laid the groundwork on all that foundation. The guys who function this way, surprisingly, and we've alluded to this, church planting, as a quote, often meets strong resistance in some of our churches. We talked about that. You know what that's like. And from some church leaders. Turfism is a prevalent obstacle in any association of SBC, whether it's in a new work area or in a established area. In some, it's more prominent than others. Some of you mentioned Ed Stetzer, who is making a great impact on us these days in some of his writing. Ed asked this question in one of his books. He says, how did Christianity change from a faith that spread primarily through church planting to a faith in which church planting has become an exceptional practice? That was from his How to Plant a Church study guide. The obvious reason he goes ahead and concludes is that when churches become the establishment, all newcomers are viewed as competition within their territory. Surprisingly to me has been, as we are working with church planters across the nation in whatever venue they're in, some of the it's interesting how much turfism easily moves into even a new church planter. You think, okay, a new church planter, he's going to be the one that would naturally think we're going to multiply churches. They're philosophically there. Yes, sir. Right.
Because they're not getting the job
right
done, this church is needed.
Right.
Church leaders kind of, even if that's not expressed, they sense sense that
it's an intimidation on them. That's a good point. It is, and which means it's that person is an insecure leader, or he doesn't have a kingdom vision. But you're exactly right, and it's well to understand that as you're approaching that issue of turfism or territorialism in your associations when you're trying to build a climate, work around that. And in many communities where a church was planted in our association over the years in eastern Colorado, I found this to be true from other groups. I'd go in and I remember going in and in Lyman, Colorado. Some of you have mentioned Lyman. We planted our church there in 1984, and I visited as a planter. I visited all the existing churches, town of about 2,500. Visited all the churches and the pastors, that is, and introduced myself. I wanted them to know me firsthand, not get a rumor about me. I told them who we were, and I said we're here to plant a new church. I'm appointed missionary. And I was honest with him. I said, I don't know if it's going to work or not, but I'm here because I believe God called us. We're supported by Southern Baptists and so forth. Most resistance I got was from American Baptist pastor who was there. The others, you know, other liturgical, they didn't care. The most encouragement I had was from a quasi-charismatic guy. And we became deep friends. I remember... the American Baptist pastor, he resisted. He said, well, why are you planting a church here? Why don't you go down to Hugo? This is another little town. I said, well, we're going to plant there too. Then we're going to plant there. You know, just went on. But I made him a commitment. I said, now, if any of your disenchanted people come over, because he said that's all it's going to be. You're just going to get a bunch of disenchanted people from my church. He knew his culture. But I said, no, if they do come, I'll give you a commitment. I'll send them back to you and say, don't come until you clear your conscience there. After about four of those, he wasn't as interested in me doing that anymore. But our percentage wasn't all that great because there were some of those. Some of them went back, cleared their conscience, but they still had baggage and they came over and then they became problems. It's always going to be that way. But the charismatic guy, I remember we came to his Wednesday night service, and we had just made the big splash. My wife and our three kids had the big splash in the Lyman Leader paper, weekly paper. Garners, Southern Baptist, starting a new church. By the way, it wasn't a reporter came out. I put the article in there. And but it came out, and Ken Freeman said, we have the Garners here. We had visited his church on Wednesday night. We have the Garners here. They're planting a new Southern Baptist church here in our town. And then he broke into a shout. He said, praise the Lord. And I told my family after that, everybody, I said, you know, that's the one thing about charismatic. They love anybody. They don't care. They love anybody, you know. Welcome. But I thought, isn't it interesting? Your own tribe. Now, what really, own tribe rejected you, but here are the kingdom guys. And we had a great relationship to be kingdom people. And I told him, I said, you know, if you got a view of Southern Baptists, I don't know what they look like to you, but I'm trying to come in as a cooperative type of person. I want you to judge me on the basis of me. And we got along good. And many of those, even that American Baptist pastor, got involved in a crusade that we helped do to do some evangelism. The disheartening thing, was then when, as we planted more churches across that region, we got a little too close to a few of our own churches, Southern Baptist churches. I think we got within 17 miles of this church and got a lot of kickback then, which was really kind of, interesting. But anyway, but church planting, ADOM like this focuses on penetrating lostness. A couple of things here, and I got this from Stetzer. If you don't like Stetzer, I'm sorry. I believe Dr. Payne's got a book over here that you can read instead. He's probably not here. I'm just trying to bone him up. Oh, there he is. I do have his first book, but he never gave me a second book, so I just got one of them over here. Actually, Dr. Payne, I think I bought this one. Just want you to know. I bought this book. All right. We're going to have an offering at the end of this session for books. Anyway, here are the five common obstacles that Stetzer says about that are for against penetrating lostness and why we resist it. Number one, some believe that the large church is better and it is more advantageous to have fewer full service churches. I think somebody quoted his research earlier. And his research says that this does not support the idea. My research does not support the idea, he said. So some would say that a large church is better and more advantageous than to have fewer full-service churches than all these little struggling churches. Okay? Second, the parish church mindset supports having a single church for a particular geographical region. That's the parish church mindset. We get that from, Roman Catholicism and so forth, the parish church, one church. And in the West, and I think in the North too, those comity agreements, C-O-M-I-T-Y, comity agreements, were so big. And in the early days, four Southern Baptists were nationally, the American Baptists would go in, the Methodists, Presbyterian go in, different places, and they'd say, well, we'll take this town, and you take that town. Sounds pretty efficient. The problem is, it's very naive. And if it carries over in our day, it's naive to think that one church of one denominational persuasion, theological persuasion, can reach everybody. We won't reach everybody if we plant just one Southern Baptist church there. We need to plant many. And we need to get other groups to plant too. So that parish idea. Stetzer points out that this failed strategy has plagued mainline Protestant groups. And if you're working in areas where you're following those mainline groups that are dying off, that's been a part of it. Third, some have a professional church syndrome that only seminary-trained pastors are the legitimate expression of a pastor leader. That's a mouthful, but it's saying that you got to have an ordained seminary-trained person. Is there anything wrong with seminary-trained guys? Boy, I hope not. But if we're to penetrate lostness, especially rural areas where we've got to plant the presence, we can't have that model. We've got to see the people of God doing their work. So that professional church syndrome. Then fourth, the ideal exists that dying churches must be revived before any new church is planted. And all of us have had that experience. We'll probably say resuscitation is more impossible to do than plant a new church. That doesn't mean we don't need to work at these 33,000 and plus Southern Baptist churches that are 200 in worship attendance and less, and then 63% that are 99 and less. And got a letter from several guys who are working at this, and I'm not naive. You know that there's some little rural churches, cemetery churches, cemetery association churches, that are, you think, how in the world? I don't believe God can do anything with that. And we know that there's such. But we don't need to give up. But we need to find many of those that we can ask God to do some resurrection. Some believe you can then, that's what I'm saying there, that it's easier, that we need to revive the churches we have. Okay. Then finally, there's a myth that the nation is already evangelized. So, we've got to realize that the nation isn't evangelized. Rural areas are not evangelized. There's a vast number of, there's 63 million people in rural U.S., I think, or maybe it's North America. And I can tell you, if the percentage is right, many, many of them are lost. Even with the huge number of Southern Baptist churches in rural areas across the 14 or 15 main established states even. And it's a whole different world when you start talking about the others. So, but this mentality says We're going to focus on penetrating pockets of lostness, not doing maintenance work. Do we need to resolve conflicts in churches? Yes. Do we need to get churches healthy? Yes. But I tell you, the way to get a church healthy and a pastor healthy is to help him to see some growth, to be on mission, and to know that he can penetrate lostness. That church will get awfully healthy right then. But so very often, we think of being quote pastor to pastors as DOMs, and I was a pastor to many pastors. That means relationship. That means encouragement. But it never meant to be a chaplain. I could better help anybody by helping them get a strategy to reach people for Christ and grow the church to penetrate their lostness. Okay, a third thing. This kind of mission model leadership develops an associational-based church planning strategy. There is a great strength, and you notice I'm saying it's associational-based. And the ADOM can be that guy that leads out in that very thing, to not just talk about church health, not just talk about church growth things, but actually developing a planting strategy. As we surveyed these particular guys and saw them as a good model, they showed that kind of initiative. They initiated. Not only they came in and helped local churches plan strategy, but they did it in a broad base of a strategy. So that's priority, and if a director of missions is not of that mindset, he may not be a planter. He may not be have all those skills, but he can be a facilitator to do that. All right. Now,
it's a little bit different, just a little bit, but when you're talking about those eight guys that were surveyed off, and they're put on the field predominantly by the North American Mission Board, and they're mandated to plant churches.
Right.
Some of us are fully funded by our local churches.
Good point.
And now, I'm very fortunate in my association that 75% of my churches believe in church planting.
Amen.
And NAM tells me that's very high.
It is. It's way above average.
Yeah. So consequently, a lot of us are out there, and our churches aren't fully behind the whole process.
Not only are they not fully behind it, they're very resistant. And some of you, I had a DOM from North Carolina write me the other day when we talked about this little reach strategy I'll share with you in the next segment. And he said, "How in the world can I do this?" He started naming off the King James Only group. He named. Many pastors that were 80 and over, on and on and on. I wish I could pull up that email. I didn't run it off. And he said, "How in the world can I get this started?" So we just talked about that. Say, well, got to find a coalition of the willing. Got to find at least one. Do you have one bright spot, one young guy that's in a church that he would like to break out of the mold and pour all you can into him? Do damage control with the rest. But you're exactly right. And the thing I'm challenging directors of missions that are in areas like Missouri, Alabama, Georgia, all over, especially rural areas. By the way, guess who the only mission strategist, in a formal sense, there is in those rural associations across Southern Baptist Convention? It's you, DOM. It's a DOM. And that's why, as a rural guy, that's why I kind of try to interact with rural DOMs, because you're it. You don't have, if you were in Kansas City, you might have a mission strategist there, partially funded or whatever, regardless. So you'll have some help there. But if you don't set the strategy or encourage it, plan it, promote it, lead out, it won't get let out. I think there is great potential to reinvent church planting in associations like you're talking about. You've got a head start, though, with what you just said. But I acknowledge the difference. I acknowledge the difference. By the way, there's some guys that are fully funded that are not like this. Now, I'm not here to be critical, but there's a lot of fear right now with GCR and Newark DOM saying, wow, and the churches that are saying that. Is our DOM, who is 40, 50, 60% funded by NAM, is he going to, we're going to lose him? I don't know how this is going to come down. I'm not going to give you an opinion on it. I'll just tell you how I'm going to vote. I think I'm going to vote Republican next time, though. But here's the thing, and I think it's true. I don't care what happens on this. The funded directors of missions, if they are this model, which many are, mission strategists, leading their churches to penetrate lostness, don't have a worry in the world. They're missionaries. Southern Baptists want to fund them. But if they are in some area that suddenly all they're doing is a newsletter, and there is scores of lostness there, and that missionary is the only one, and we're funding heavily, that guy needs to be in fearful. That funding won't be there, I predict. This is the wave of the future. And it's not just to get in on the trend. It's the needed thing. And I believe in like Missouri and other places, I believe as you build that climate, see, the danger there is that new churches begin to look at associations. They say, this is a archaic entity. This is non-relevant. Why did they do that? Well, it may be justified, may be unjustified. But if it's justified, it's because they're saying, I don't like to do things just because I'm getting benefit from it. But there is some point of benefit. If we are penetrating losses, and there's going to be some young avant-garde pastors that are going to plug in with us because that's what they want. If they don't want to do that, we'll let them go anyway. So I'm saying this is survival of associationalism in Southern Baptist Convention. Man, you're getting me on my stump now. Sorry, guys. Number five, this model of ADOM strategist, mission strategist, builds a church planting climate. Now, let me get my notes here. Be sure I'm on track. That's number five. Did I miss one? Okay. Okay. Yeah, man. I don't miss this one. I can really preach on this one. This model and any DOM, and I'm just using the model as an excuse to go beyond, is prophetic, passionate, and compassionate. The guys who made this thing work had some leverage, as you mentioned, but in the midst of that leverage, they also had the great downdrag of maintenance or those that don't want to do anything. You'd be surprised how that has set in many places across the Newark areas. Either somebody has come in who has a different approach or different thought about what a director of missions should do, and they don't want to be disturbed by that guy talking to them about planting churches or penetrating lostness. Uncomfortable. So if you get enough of that tilt, then what happens is you can tend to lose you go into maintenance. But the role of the ADMCSS is the role of prophetic leadership. Prophetic in the sense of standing for the truth and speaking the truth. This prophetic stance is vital in addressing the many, many hindrances, obstacles, objectors to church planting and the issue of turfism. Who has a more influential position in the association than the DOM? Who has a broader perspective of the entire associational region than the DOM? Who intersects with more local church leadership? And has a better understanding of the unique strengths of individual churches than the DOM? Who has the most advantageous position from which he can effectively mentor leaders and churches, planters, pastors, key leaders lay leaders than the ADOM. Now, so what we found is those that do this have demonstrated intentional leadership, kingdom-mindedness, kingdom-focused leadership, and a practice speaking truth to the objectors and advocacies for emerging entrepreneurial leaders. Now, you, I think you mentioned this, or I'm blaming it on you, okay? There are some young, innovative people. They sometimes need to be reined in some ways. But I'd rather have somebody like that who colors outside the box than some of the opposite. And if they have a director of missions who loves them and has a mission vision and is not intimidated, you can come alongside them and you can take an Apollos or something like that and head them in the right direction and harness that energy. Southern Baptist Convention desperately needs that. Many guys have left because, you know, they have been disenchanted. So prophetic in the sense of speaking the truth, that takes a lot of courage, especially when you don't have the climate. But even then, passionate though, they're passionate about doing the work, but then compassionate. The guys that I've known who've been effective in this love their pastors, love their churches, love their region. And they would never do something to just completely destroy anything. They were compassionate. If the term, which we don't like to use anymore, pastors to pastors, is valid, it meant that they love those they worked with them. But they weren't just a chaplain to help them over the doldrums. They said, "Let me help you. I'm identifying with you." And then, let me do this quickly, and then we'll take a break. ADOM builds a church planting climate. It's key, I think, that you do that and recognize that in 1 year you won't get that done. But you create the climate by building partnerships, by doing good research, showing the naysayers what the situation, the reality of the needs out there and the unreached people and people groups. I think that's self-explanatory. Let me zip on through here. Creates partnerships. Is intentional. These are both internal partnerships and they're external partnerships. This mission strategist will look around and find stronger churches and connect them with the younger churches. And I'm telling you, I've always wondered why mature pastors who have a growing church, if it looked like a mega church, why don't they see a vision of just undergirding and bringing under wing many, many young pastors? Some do that. But what a great challenge to reproduce yourself by these pastors looking around, and you can connect them, the stronger pastors, with their gifts to some of the smaller churches, smaller pastors, creating partnership. But then also creating partners outside. Those of you in new work areas, you know you need to do that in order to plant the churches. You can be the advocate to build those outside partnerships with a planter or with a new with an area that's not being reached more effectively. They did this. These guys were masters in doing this. Mentioned the Missouri partnership with Arkansas Valley with Frank Cornelius, who's not even part of the study. Frank effectively did that with, you may have come and asked him, but he did it with Mississippi and other places. Willing to do that. Good model of that kind of deal. Then, last thing, next last is develops a strategic church planning funding. What I mean by that is, and we alluded to this, strategic church planting funding, where funding helps and not hurts. Just if you had all the money in the world to do church planting, it doesn't mean that you need to use it in certain areas. Strategic, knowing how to do that, who to fund and not what to fund, or who to fund, who not to fund, but what projects should be funded, what shouldn't be funded, how those are to be funded, is strategic and it's got to be missiologically based. And then the final thing was developing indigenous lay leadership. These guys did this. An effective mission strategist will stay there and watch and raise up and be the one who even pastors are the world's worst because they say, well, I don't want to lose my best lay leader over here. But you can be, over a period of time, identifying them, bringing them out, and giving them opportunities to serve.